Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is The Guardian. I had to go about it, write it out, and find
it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. Welcome to The Final Word, Ashes Daily. I'm Emma John, and I'm in the UK, where staying up through the night to watch your team lose slowly at their sporting endeavours is considered less a form of madness and more an expression of the national character. My colleagues Jeff Lemon and Adam Collins, meanwhile, are reporting on this fourth test from their homeland of Australia, a place of sunshine, self-esteem and healthy living. And we'll be joining them at the Sydney Cricket Ground for their no doubt cheerful analysis of this fourth day's play shortly. For Pat Cummins' men, it was another satisfactory day at the office, with everyone on full course for their maximum end-of-year bonus. For England, meanwhile, it was more like a car coming off the road onto a shallow but slippery bank. The gradual slide downwards doesn't seem too bad while it's happening, but you're picking up speed and there's a nasty ditch waiting for you at the bottom, which you know is going to wreck the car because you've crashed into it before, several times. In other words, Australia batted England into serious peril in this second innings and declared to set them a target of 388 runs, which, let's remember, is more than they've managed to score all series. England added only 36 to their overnight score, with Johnny Bairstow out for 113 as he tried to marshal the tail. 40 minutes before lunch, Australia's openers were back in the middle with a first innings cushion of over 100, but England had both of them out before the break. Joe Root brought Mark Wood on in only the sixth over, and Wood repaid the favour immediately with pace, bounce and a nick behind off Warner. After lunch, he followed up with his new bunny, Marnus Labuschagne, cutting the world number one off for only 29. When Jack Leach grabbed his second wicket, bowling Steve Smith with a slider, Australia were four down for 86, and England felt momentarily in the hunt. But since he got back into the side a matter of days ago, Usman Khawaja has proven he just doesn't quit. His first 50 came off 86 balls, his second off 45, as he and Cameron Green established an ever-accelerating partnership that went into overdrive after tea. The pair indulged in some serious stroke play off England's spinners, and when Root brought Wood back on to slow things down, Green pulled his first delivery for four. Cummins was only moved to declare once Green was out for a sparkling 74, and Alex Carey fell first ball, so that Leach, England's chief wicket-taker of the day, was left stranded on a hat-trick. England's openers survived the last 11 overs of play. You could argue they did better than that, taking 9 runs off one Cummins over. And their batters now have the very tangible target of batting out the final day to save this test. Are they capable? I'll leave that to you to decide. Well, I bet Adam and Jeff have thoughts too. So let's go over to them in Sydney.
Day four at the SCG, and it was a buffet. It was a treat. There were so many things to happen. There was Johnny Bairstow coming out unbeaten on 103. That didn't go on for too long. He got added 10 and then got out. Stuart Broad tried to whack a few. He got out. Jack Leach got out playing a horrible shot. That didn't add a lot. And they ended up, 128 behind, something like that on the first innings. And then, really, it was Mark Wood time for a while, and then it was Usman time, and then it was England's openers time, and there were so many things, it's hard to pick where to start, but it probably has to be the guy who made twin centuries in a test match. This doesn't happen very often. In terms of Australians, 16 players had done it before Usman Khawaja joined that club. The comeback kid, The comeback king. He's not a kid. He's too young to be a kid. He can't be a comeback kid anymore. He was doing LeBron James in the first innings, so he can be the comeback king. 137 in the first innings, and then 100 unbeaten in the second. 102, 103?
101.
Thereabouts. You know, we don't pay attention to detail on this show. The important thing is that he made 100 runs, and there were the two kinds of Usman. The test match Usman in the first innings and the T20 Usman in the second innings, who was like, slog sweep for six, flip it over my shoulder, play the reverse, do whatever I want. And he just seemed to have a great time.
Yeah, and the fact is, the first hour and a half he was at the crease or something like that, it wasn't that kind of innings. In fact, he was hard held with Green for a time there, but after tea, they added 90 runs in 60 minutes. Khawaja made 60 runs from the first 50 balls he faced after tea, as you say, with all the shots in the world, getting himself into the 90s and giving himself an opportunity at twin centuries. Only 9 Ashes twin tons in the 145-year mm-hmm. history of this stoush. There have been 3 at the SCG, Dougie Walters in 69, nice. Ricky Ponting in his 100th test match in 2006. Mm-hmm. And now Usman Khawaja joins them. And, you know, we sort of talked a lot about Usman when he made his 100 in the first dig, about this not necessarily being burdened with too much baggage from before.
Yep.
But, I mean, he really has created now a case for him. It's impossible to leave him out into the future. I'm not entirely sure he'll play at Hobart next week, by the by. But when it comes to the contribution he'll be asked to make this year, 9 test matches in Asia, it's now inevitable. If he makes a pair here, it's probably not. Such is the fickle nature
of the
vagaries.
Sport.
The vagaries of the game. But yep. I tell you what, you say the different types of Usman Khawaja. First innings coming in at 117 for 3, having to get through that period, negotiate a tough second new ball stretch on the second morning, get through Broad and Anderson bowling beautifully.
Just left everything.
Spell after spell from Mark Wood. Maintaining concentration on a hard track.
Yep.
And then today, batting with Cameron Green, who was out of form until he wasn't, getting to tee and then exploding. We're seeing a guy who can shift gears so quickly, so readily, depending on what the match situation is. It's striking that he's been out of the test team through his early 30s for the most part. It's a reminder that 5 or 6 years ago, I once said on our podcast early on that if you were picking an Earth 11, he'd be the first guy on the team sheet. Well, he looks like that guy today.
Yeah, that was that 2015-16 sort of era for about a year where he pretty much was the best player on the planet.
Yeah.
But he's always had this issue of his highs are so high, but then his in-betweens are mediocre, and that has been his problem. I wonder if that's a permanent change, or is he just in a hot run again, or is this that because he's older and more experienced, he's worked out his game, he's more relaxed, he knows what to do, he's enjoying it more, he's not taking on all that pressure on himself about having to succeed. Maybe he's broken through in a way where he can keep doing this for a couple of years, play for another 2 or 3 years,
yep.
instead of doing it for 6 months and having it sort of drift away. I don't know,
yeah.
but I just have this feeling. He seemed so relaxed.
Whereas
you'd think in this situation, coming back, you could be really nervous. You could be like, you know, Matty Elliott coming back in 2003 in Cairns or whatever it was, and thinking, I've got to take my chance, and snatching at it, and he hasn't done that.
Yeah. Look, I might have said this on the podcast the other day or somewhere else, but Usman Khawaja wasn't always the easiest player to deal with in the Australian team. I mean, far from it. He might have been, sometimes, the hardest player to deal with, because he had that me against the world thing going on.
Yep.
And sometimes that's not always particularly flattering. And I think that he sometimes backed himself into a corner a little bit on that basis. None of that now. I mean, I've interviewed him twice this week, and he could not be more chilled out. And yeah, that different mindset. I suppose knowing that the next step for him is going overseas with the Australian Test team, and he'll get an extended run once they're over there. I'm sure of that. Whether he plays in Hobart or not is a slightly different conversation, I reckon. I know that people will be baying for blood if he doesn't get picked next week, on the basis that Marcus Harris got a couple of starts here and threw it away. I suspect they will be tempted to stick with Harris anyway, but that's kind of irrelevant. Looking at the medium term, he'll go to Pakistan, he'll go to Sri Lanka, he'll go to India. That seems certain now, given his wonderful run against spin. We saw the reverse sweep again today repeatedly, and the conventional sweep. And Jack Leach bowled a lot better today too, and had better fields set for him for the most part. I'm not saying that Jack Leach is Graham Swan or anything like that, the first spinner who Khawaja had to face on this ground 11 years ago, but simply that he now gets that extended run. It's not about whether he's going to be picked next week.
Yep.
It's about, how he can make the most of this final fling.
I want to talk about Khawaja at the SCG for just a second,
yes.
because this is 3 consecutive hundreds in 3 innings at the SCG. 171 the last time he played here against England in 2018. at the end of that series. And give you a guess. There's one other player who's got three consecutive Ashes hundreds at the SCG.
It's probably got to be I was going to say, have you Hammond?
It is. It is. Wally Hammond did it. Averaged about 250 on the SCG.
Yeah.
But, you know, Wally Hammond.
Albeit two were in the same summer. Bodyline summer, he made 200s here. And, of course, the 1928-29 double ton.
But it's a nice grouping. Khawaja, Hammond. You know, Wally Hammond had some problems downstairs. Khawaja, all fine in that department as far as we know. If you listen to the show, we'll know what we're talking about. So he's actually coming out better. He's coming out ahead of Wally Hammond if we factor in everything across all departments.
But I'll throw you a few more Sydney things with Khawaja Sheller. He averages 98.33 here. Only two men in Test history, Nick Savage from news.com popped this up on Twitter yesterday, have a better average and have scored more runs than Khawaja at this ground. The aforementioned Wally Hammond and Tendulkar, who made three centuries here as well across five tests, including his unbeaten 241. So you get a sense of where he sits here at this ground.
Mm-hmm.
And look, you can't take your home ground with you around the world, but this isn't your, you know, India did an amazing thing here last year, saving that test match on a pretty flat track that got flatter and flatter and flatter. They could have played test cricket on it on day eight. This isn't that.
But it played well today. It looked like it played the best today it has in the test match.
Okay.
Even when Australia bowled at England in the last session, they didn't look as deadly. Cummins and Stark didn't. Boland got a couple to go, but it didn't look like a minefield, which it did on day two, maybe.
I would simply say the new ball had the ball pinging around their gloves quite a lot in the last 11 overs there, and it kind of did that all day, especially when Wood was bowling. So, I don't want people to read the scorecard of this game in 20 years' time and go, oh, England, 3-0, twin hundreds, home ground, must have been a flatty. It's not.
Yep.
This has been class from the get-go, and the way he was able to steward Cameron Green to higher ground today too. Cameron Green, 57 runs coming into this innings, in the series, that is. And I kind of thought after tea he would come out trying to access deep mid-wicket the way that he did when he struck four sixes here out of his 84 against India last time around. But he actually waited till quite deep in the innings to start playing those kinds of shots and played conventional cricket, hit the ball bloody hard. But it wasn't T20 cricket, it was Cameron Green trying to play himself into form cricket.
Yeah.
And who knows, he might have just done that.
He might have. There was one amazing big shot he played, though. The Mark Wood came on to bowl a new spell. Second ball of it, I think. Bouncer about a metre outside off stump, and Green reaches out, fetches it, and puts it over the mid-wicket fence. That's what you can do with that kind of albatross reach that he's got. I know we haven't got onto England yet, but one last thing on the Khawaja train, which we do have to address. I mean, you say Hobart doesn't matter, but it also does matter because they can't leave a guy who's made twin tons out of the match. But Travis Head will be back. I mean, what happens? Does he go up the top and push out Marcus Harris?
Well, he will impact. I mean, he's going to open in Pakistan, right?
Yeah.
Unless Harris makes a ton next week. And look, I'm just saying that my gut is they just ride it through because, like, that's the attitude they seemingly are taking under George Bailey, to give players opportunities and to back them in all the way. I'd be surprised if they dump him for the final test after an excellent performance at the G in context and a couple of... I'd just be surprised if they pulled that ripcord now, but I am certain they will pull it before Karachi. So it's interesting. I don't think it'll break Khawaja's heart if he doesn't play next week either. There will be a national uproar.
Right.
I quite sincerely don't think it's about next week. I think it's about the nine tests away from home.
All right.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit ServiceNow.com/AI for people to learn more.
Well, there's not a lot to talk about from the end of England's innings because, you know, it fell away, as you might have expected.
Oh, no, I thought you had a second innings. I thought they had quite well tonight.
Their first one. They had two goes today. But it was notable that Jack Leach bowled a lot better, and he bowled better because they brought the field up.
Yes.
And because players couldn't immediately take a single and get off strike. And there were dot balls, and there was pressure. And then what do you know? Things started to work for him. The ball he got Marcus Harris out with, I'm not sure that was deliberate. I think he'd been bowling very flat, and then he really flighted this ball. And I think he meant to flight it, but I don't think he meant to bowl it 3 feet outside off stump. But Harris went after it, because he does after anything outside off stump, and nicked it behind. But just the fact that Leach was prepared to throw it up, just the fact that he bowled a couple of quiet overs before that, you know, that felt good. He edged one behind. Ollie Pope with the gloves as a substitute keeper took the first three catches.
He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Watch your space.
And I don't know. And then Leach, you know, he gets a second. He gets Steve Smith playing a horrible shot, backing away and trying to chop it off his stumps. And it was like Rangan Herath used to get Steve Smith out. But I don't think they're quite the same bowler. But then you do wonder if, you know, if Australia had declared as soon as Khawaja got the 100, Leach would have had 2 for 85, and instead he picked up two more wickets in, you know, a couple of overs later because he got Green off the top edge and then Carey first ball. 4 for 85. Looks a lot better on the scorecard. So I wonder what people would have made of his analysis without the extra two wickets.
Oh, no, they would have said he bowled well because he did bowl well. He did bowl the best he's bowled on tour. I think as a finger spinner in Australia, to be successful, you need to threaten both edges. That's what Jadeja did last year, remember? Here at this ground as well. I don't think you can be a finger spinner in Australia and not have a second string to your bow other than your stock delivery. That's why Lyon's so effective, because of the extra bounce. So you effectively, I mean, it's not that he bowls a deucer or something, but we saw Lyon get a wicket yesterday with one that went straight on. That's not his normal mode of dismissal. It's the big turning off break or the one that leaps using that extraordinary overspin that he gets on the ball. The observation you could make of Leach in what we've seen so far is that he tries to give it a rip, but it's all side spin. Today, he managed to get two, hit the shiny side, and skid straight on. That's threatening both edges. It may not be quite as pretty as the overspinner, but again, it kind of we're looking at the way that Lyon got Stokes out yesterday. That's not a million miles away from the ball that he bowled to Smith today. A little bit quicker, hit the shiny side and sped up. That is a weapon for a finger spinner in this country, so fair play to him. And I like the fact that it was the arm ball that got Harris too. Sometimes you've got to set the ball wide at the arm ball to tempt the drive, and nicely pouched by Ollie Pope, who was the sub keeper. So well played, Jack Leach. I was gutted for him that he didn't get the chance to bowl the hat-trick ball. This might be the right place to transition to the Hall of Fame in a moment.
I think after one more thing, which is Mark Wood, because he didn't quite get the new ball, but he almost got the new ball. Got it after a few overs.
Two overs, yeah.
Nicks off David Warner with pace, you know. Yeah. Warner hasn't much liked facing Mark Wood in this series, but, you know, got one that startled him. And then gets the edge from Labuschagne as well. Now, you know, I think we mentioned that piece that Bharat Sundaresan wrote about Marnus Labuschagne bragging that no one had got his outside edge in 9 months or whatever it was. Mark Wood's got it 3 times in this series. Do you start talking? Is there a psychological stranglehold? Is someone going to say that he's a bunny? Probably not.
There's some good numbers.
He's got a very good play. He's got him out 3 times for 17 runs or something.
3 times in 22 balls since he went to number one on the ICC batting rankings. Mm. I mean, that's a good record. And, you know, let's not overplay this point, but Labuschagne did enjoy some good luck earlier in the series, and now he's experiencing a rough trot against a fine bowler. He got a start today, by the way. He got a start the other day too. But, you know, Wood used well by Root in short bursts, and, you know, the amount of times that Wood ends up on the turf, I mean, in a way, I hope they don't play him next week. I don't want them to break him. I don't want Wood to, you know, get a stressy in the last week of the tour or something like that. But on the other hand, I'll be gutted if he misses out, because he's been a breath of fresh air. 2 wickets today, I think 8 or maybe 9 for the series. Dan Bredig put on Twitter, if the world was fair, he'd have 20. And I share that view. So, well bowled, Mark Wood. And Jack Leach in the wickets for the first time across the series. I feel as though those two guys, and Broad and Anderson, but especially those two guys, can be really proud of their achievements today.
It's the Final Word Hall of Fame. The most final word moment of the day. There are a couple. There are a couple of candidates. And it is hard to go past, I think, the one that we alluded to earlier, which is Jack Leach, 2 in 2 balls, on a hat-trick, 4 wickets, could take a fiver. And the opposition captain, Pat Cummins, due to come in next, and he says, "No thanks, champ. Don't fancy it. In we come."
There's a few bits to this. I'm a bit cross with Pat to what he did to Alex Carey. I mean, if Alex Carey twats a 6 that ball, then they're still batting, all right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's think it through.
Right.
He gets a 6 that ball, they're going to keep the foot down for another couple of overs. But instead calling them in. What does that say about the decision to expose Carey, who's down on form? You know, I take the bigger picture view around these things sometimes. Yep. Like, you know, in some ways I would have been happy for Australia to have let Green advance to 100 had time permitted for the same reason.
That was a bigger picture thing as well. And then a lot of people were saying, why didn't they declare earlier? And I thought there's more value in them investing in Green to get him to a test century.
That's right.
Than there is in having five more overs at England tonight.
Yeah, in maybe trying to bowl England out in, I think for the usual suspects, one of Australia to declare so early
on
so they can play golf tomorrow.
Clear on day two.
But, you know, that's fine. We know how they operate. We know what they would prefer. But for those who...
Should have declared at 117 for three on day one.
Yeah.
You know, pop them in at the end of day one.
Whatever it takes for a four-day test match.
Had five overs at them at the... Oh, that tricky little session before in the dusk. Yeah.
Well, they have made England bat in the dusk a number of times. And on the way through to my Hall of Fame, I'll say, well batted Zach Crawley, well batted Haseeb Ameed. Australia didn't bowl well, but I like the way they ran between the wickets.
Right.
I like the way Haseeb Ameed batted, especially right in behind it. He left well. You know, I'm not saying that they're going to bat for 4 hours tomorrow, but they have earned the right to try. My Hall of Fame is partly that. I couldn't exactly complain. I just called Khawaja's 100, but I was behind the mic for what would have been the hat-trick ball, and it could have finally resolved that for me. So I did think for a moment, oh no. But my true Hall of Fame, my true sincere Hall of Fame, Ollie Pope, subkeeper, four catches. He equals the record. It's only been done once before in Test cricket where a sub, a wicketkeeper, has taken four catches.
Riddhiman Saha.
And it was here last year, Riddhiman Saha. You know how I love, if you listen to the show regularly, you'll love when something hasn't happened ever or rarely happened and happens twice in quick succession.
But we've only had sub keepers for about 3 or 4 years.
Well, no, but you could. I would say that you could. I would imagine that.
Outside of the original 11.
Yeah. But I mean, I would think there wouldn't be anyone who's taken the gloves halfway through a test match and taken four catches either. Otherwise, we'd probably know about it. So, or a subfielder for that matter. No subfielder has taken
Eunice
four catches.
Khan did.
Oh, Eunice Khan, sorry, you're right. But still, I think it's noteworthy. And you know what? Sam Billings is in the squad next week for Hobart. We might have mentioned that on the show yesterday.
Yes.
They said to him at the last minute, don't go to the Caribbean. Drive from Brisbane to Sydney and then fly to Hobart. He might
Gold Coast, yeah.
He might debut. But, but I tell you what, Ollie Pope's done himself no harm whatsoever in terms of a recall to be the keeper.
Absolutely.
He's done the job for England once before at senior level. Well, at test level. He did it in a couple of one days, I reckon, but also in New Zealand two summers ago. So who knows there? But he'll have that little piece of shared history with Riddhiman Saha, Hall of Fame nominee.
Yeah, Riddhiman and Blues. I wonder whether he might find it harder if he's picked as a keeper. Because there'll be more pressure if you pick just the keeper in the match rather than just coming out to do it. And final Hall of Fame nomination on Sam Billings being told to drive from the Gold Coast in a Sydney Thunder branded ute, because they like the BBL teams have these, you know, wrapped cars with all of the stuff on the side. They gave him one of those to drive down. And we were talking about it on the BBC commentary, saying, I wonder where he is. And he heard this. And so he sent on WhatsApp, he sent a live location link to Stephen Finn so that Stephen Finn could open his phone and there was Sam Billings' head going down the Pacific Highway down the north New South Wales coast. And we tracked him all day. We're like, oh, he's just gone past Port Macquarie. And then, which meant the whole commentary was just people asking me what this place was. What's Dorigo? What's Port Macquarie? What's Hat Head? You know, while I was having to explain Australian geographical landmarks. He ended up in Newcastle before the end of the day. I think he had a swim there, jumped in the sea.
Did he?
I hope so. I hope he did.
I hope it was a broken down ute too. I'm reminded of that the Hello Darling song on the road from St. Lucia to surface in my old university car. I hope it was like a broken down car with no air conditioning, windows down and all the rest of it.
It's got 2x100 air conditioning. Just put the windows down. I hope he was playing, I hope he's playing Wichita Lineman on a cassette player. I hope he had a straw in his mouth. I hope he had a dog in the back and a swag and a set of tools in case he could pick up some work along the way.
I hope he plays.
I hope
he plays a specialist bat, because I'll tell you what, Johnny Bairstow's not playing next week. Josh Butler's not playing next week and Ben Stokes not playing next week. They're going to be a bit light on, so that they might need Billings to play as a specialist bat, even if he isn't the wicketkeeper.
What if maybe James Vince? Maybe it's time for the Vincibles to come back.
Please, please do it. Please bring James Vince into the squad.
I think that's the final word, Ashes Daily. As the name suggests, it's every day when the Ashes happen, which will be day five. We're going to get to day five without much help from rain in Sydney. So tune in with us then. Tune in with us on Hobart. You can find our other shows in our podcast feed. Use the internet. You know how it works. And you can support the show on patreon.com/thefinalword if you're so inclined. Jeff Lemon, Adam Collins, we'll see you tomorrow. Day five.
Thanks for listening. Good night. I had to go about it.
That's it for today. Thanks from Adam, Jeff and me for listening. We will see you back here for the final day of this Sydney Test tomorrow. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or leave us a rating. And this episode was produced by Sophia Tarek. The Final Word is produced by Bad Producer Productions and edited by James Hurley. The executive producers are Melanie Tate and Miles Martinoni.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.